Hello, and we're back. And we're going to be talking to George Ciccariello Marr. And he's written numerous articles for Counterpunch, and he's a PhD candidate at Berkeley. He is currently working on a book entitled We Created Him, A People's History of the Bolivarian Revolution, and we are reaching him in California. Hi, George.
George, welcome to the show. Again.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah, no, we loved having you on the show the first time, so it's great to have you back. To begin with, we wanted just to talk about how Zelaya was able to get back into the country, because last time we talked to you, he was trying to get back, but now he appears to be back into the country.
Yes, essentially, the first time that we know of that Zelaya attempted to return to Honduras, this was by plane, and this is sort of a game of chicken in which he got into a plane and said, all right, I'm going to land in Tegucigalpa, and you're going to let me land. And in the end, the coup regime did not let him land. They actually deployed the military onto the airport runway, and the runway was blocked to physically prevent his plane from landing, which I think was probably a maneuver that was not foreseen by Zelaya. And now what we've got is actually, a trickier move by Zelaya, where he actually snuck into the country. Some say he was riding a tractor at one point, riding even a horse through the woods, through the jungle in the woods, and sneaking across the country into the capital, and before taking refuge immediately in the Brazilian embassy and declaring his presence to the coup regime. And this is something that was certainly not expected by the coup regime, and it caught the coup regime a bit flat-footed, because initially Micheletti, the coup leader, declared that this was a lie and said, no, Zelaya is relaxing in his hotel in Nicaragua. And then shortly thereafter, essentially had to admit that Zelaya was indeed in Tegucigalpa, in the capital of Honduras, and that he was in the Brazilian embassy where he could not be arrested.
And what has the Micheletti government, what has there been response to the Brazilian embassy? We've heard that there have been tear gassings and chemical attacks. Can you speak a little bit about that?
There have been a number of attacks, a lot of tear gassing on the first night, from what we know, and this is in part, or according to the coup government, is in part because Zelaya had called on his supporters to surround the Brazilian embassy, which they did certainly, and they were dispersed in a very violent way by this coup regime, who then deployed tear gas into the embassy in violation of diplomatic protocols, and also began to use, and there are lots of pictures now of them using a sort of sonic torture device that they mount onto the back of the truck and point into the embassy that emits these severely high-pitched sounds that are essentially a form of torture directed toward anyone inside the embassy. And what's striking is that this is a new device which is now simultaneously being deployed in Honduras by the coup regime and by the United States Army against protesters in Pittsburgh, protesters of the G20.
Ah, interesting. So there's a connection there between the United States' tactics and the Honduran tactics.
Certainly in terms of the tactics, and one wonders where this mechanism was purchased from, whether privately or whether through the U.S. government military deals, which were not until very recently cut back.
And with the United States, it's been interesting because Hillary Clinton, I think a couple weeks ago, she's sort of saying things that may be construed as support for the coup. There's a quote from her saying about, the curfew, that I think the government imposed a curfew to get the people off the streets so there wouldn't be any unforeseen developments. So she's sort of supporting this repression. Is the United States continuing to support this coup, or what's been their response now that Zelaya is back in the country?
Yes, and this gets back to our previous conversation, in which we were talking about a division between the State Department and the White House.
Yes.
Between Hillary Clinton and Obama. And Hillary Clinton, we should recall, has long ties with repressive and right-wing governments in the region. She had very close ties to the Colombian regime, and specifically through a number of advisors, and specifically advisors that have worked for Clinton in the past are currently advising the coup regime.
Yes, apparently Lanny Davis, I believe, is one of them,
yes.
Possibly, yeah.
He's a very, very close advisor to Clinton and is one of the spokespeople for the coup regime now. And so this is something that we should bear in mind. These are certainly charitable words coming from Clinton in an effort to soften what's going on and the actions that the coup regime is taking. But we should not neglect or fail to notice the fact that this is a violently repressive regime that has declared a state of siege for 45 days, and that is now revoked the right to assembly in an effort to get people on the street, and also revoked in to some degree the right to a free press, and have been attacking and viciously closing press outlets, including Radio Global the other day, which is one of the only critical press outlets operating in Honduras.
Yes, I'd like to sort of get on this line of questioning about the repression that's happening now. Many of us in the activist community have been receiving pictures of people being beaten, gassed. There's tanks on the streets, as you said, that there's these sonic torture devices. Is this happening on a regular basis in the cities?
I mean, again, this is something that's very difficult to know with any certainty, but we do know that when the crowds were cleared, the initial crowds that gathered around the Brazilian embassy, they were cleared, and once they were cleared, images emerged that showed clear signs of struggle. There were, you know, pieces of debris strewn all over the street, rocks and stones and sticks and tear gas canisters. And so we know that there was a struggle at this point, and the reports that we get are that there were several deaths during this repression. And actually, the reports of the retribution over the next couple of days, the next couple of evenings, when this curfew entered into effect, the reports are that there have been something like a dozen deaths in terms of just police raids of neighborhoods known to be sympathetic to Manuel Zelaya. It's very difficult to confirm any of this, and the government, the Honduran coup government, is still refusing to confirm the deaths that we know occurred. For example, when Zelaya's plane attempted to land some weeks ago now. And so it's difficult for us to get any kind of verification when the coup government is unwilling to even recognize the deaths that we know have happened.
Yes, and apparently today I read that Zelaya supporters are there, that were in a building have been arrested, and that there's some under siege, and it's sort of this continued repression, yet it's in the backdrop of the interim government saying that they're trying to seek a resolution. So what's the truth here? Are they trying to seek a resolution, or are they trying to repress the people?
Well, I think they're doing both, certainly. But what's interesting now is that some people are trying to seek a resolution in reality, which is to say the coup regime is crumbling. And this is very new news that's just coming out today, that the coup regime is beginning to divide, and that the high commanders are beginning to call for direct talks between the coup leadership and the rightful president of the country, Manuel Zelaya. And this represents a fairly significant development, because it means that military support for the coup regime, which has been a bumbling and idiotic coup regime from the beginning, military support is now beginning to dissipate, which we all know, especially in Honduras, is the key to the coup regime surviving. And so now that the military support is dissipating, what we're seeing in a way is a slow-motion version of what happened in Venezuela in April of 2002, where a regime comes to power slowly or quickly in the case of Venezuela, but slowly in this case manages to alienate even its most dogmatic supporters, and then you get this sort of division within the regime that calls for some kind of modified return to power of the former leader.
Yes, and it even seems that their support amongst the Americans, at least, seems to be crumbling as well, because even the Security Council has now called for, you know, they said that what they're doing to the Brazilian embassy must cease, and, you know, that they have to do something about this. So do you see that the international lack of support is starting to affect the coup government?
It is, and only time will tell how those in charge of the government will actually respond. For example, in the last couple of days, Micheletti has been attacking furiously at foreign governments who have been resisting this coup, or not even resisting it, but for example, he was threatening the Mexican government recently, demanding that it recognize his government within the next week or something like that, and threatening consequences if that didn't happen. There were certainly threats against the Brazilian government, essentially threats that the embassy would be taken over, which would be a serious violation. And luckily, the Brazilian government has stayed strong in its insistence that Zelaya be sheltered there, and that the Honduran regime not intervene. But only time will tell. Only time will tell whether or not the coup government will respond in a more positive way. But I think time is going to be speeding up for this government, because it's precisely because of this division that's going on within the ranks.
Yes, and I want to speak a little bit about Brazil's involvement. Why was the Brazilian embassy chosen? Why is Brazil so involved with this, and what's going on with that?
I don't think anyone can say for sure why the Brazilian embassy was chosen. I think there are a number of reasons to make us think that it would be a likely candidate. Firstly, it's the Brazilian regime is a moderate regime, relatively. This is not the Venezuelan embassy. This is not the Nicaraguan embassy or the Ecuadorian or Bolivian embassy. But as important as that probably is the fact that this is also a massively important and powerful country whose threat of a response, for example, to the siege of the embassy is a serious threat, whereas if it were the Nicaraguan embassy, it would be much easier and there would be much less of a repercussion were the Micheletti government to intervene in that embassy. So, I mean, these are just speculations, but I think the character of the leadership of Brazil and the power that Brazil exerts in Latin America are two key reasons why it could have been chosen.
Yes, and the fact that Brazil is sort of a moderate country is surprising. It's not, you know, as you said, it's not like the Venezuelan embassy was chosen. So this sort of seems that at least the moderate element in South and Central America have chosen sides. Zelaya's the leader. Would you agree with that statement?
Yes, and I would say as well that this is the message of the coup regime is a significant one, which is to say you won't get the kind of vacillation out of these moderate governments, the government of Chile, the government of Argentina, the government of Brazil. You won't get the kind of vacillation you're getting out of Hillary Clinton from these countries. And so you're getting the message that it's a much stronger united front against this coup that is developing currently.
So what's next? What do you see occurring in the next couple of weeks? What signs do you think point to maybe this coup government being dissolved? You mentioned that there's a split. Do you see that this is going to be going quickly, or is this going to be the very drawn out process?
I think it could be either in reality. It depends on a couple of factors. It depends on how quickly this split develops. It depends on what is being demanded by the splitters, if you could put it that way, these high military officials who are abandoning the Micheletti regime, the degree to which they are willing to abandon this regime entirely, or the degree to which they're actually just trying to get it to sit down and have some conversations with Zelaya. It'll also depend, though, fundamentally on mobilizations in the street. And this is, I think, to a large degree, what has sped up this process of dissolution in the coup regime is precisely the mobilizations in the street, because were it not for these mobilizations in the street, the curfew would not have been called. The closures of the radio stations, Radio Globo, would not have been as necessary for the regime were they not of the opinion that these radio stations were encouraging people to take to the streets. And so the degree to which people maintain themselves in the streets and force the regime to behave in a way that may look more repressive and more embarrassing in the international scene, this will all speed up the dissolution and the eventual collapse of this coup regime. And I honestly don't see them making it the several months now that they would have to wait it out to get to this new election.
And finally, I just want to get your opinion on American involvement in this area in the world. Now that there's this failed coup, do you think that there's going to be continued American involvement with, you know, military leaders, or is, you know, or do you think that they're going to finally back off?
I mean, I don't think there's any way that they're going to back off, because we see at the same time this is all going on, we see the consolidation of the American presence in Colombia, specifically these seven military bases that are being established as a sort of a beachhead for American capitalism in South America. This is something that they have no intention of backing off on. This is, if anything, a strategic asset that they're looking to develop and expand. What we will see, as you know, as a lot of people have been saying, is we will see a different image. We'll see a different face on this intervention. It'll look more humanitarian. It'll attempt to look softer. It'll attempt to look more democratic. It'll be less willing to look like it's in support of coups. It'll be less willing to support coups like in Honduras. Though, you know, as we saw, there's an effort to actually support the Honduran coup by the U.S. government. And had the Honduran coup leaders not proved so bumbling and not been so overtly ridiculous in some senses, you know, actually openly insulting and denigrating President Obama. Had things like this not happened, had there been an ability to maintain a sort of international, at least passivity toward the coup, then it's entirely possible that this coup would have succeeded. But like in Venezuela, we saw the coup leaders essentially ruin this for themselves.
Yes, well, thank you very much, George, once again for coming on our show. You provided a great insight, and we'll hope to have you back soon sometime and talk a little bit about this and maybe some other issues on South and Central America. That was George Chicarello Mar. He is currently writing the book called We Created Him, A People's History of the Bolivarian Revolution,